and thanks for listening to Over the Counter, the podcast from Drug Topics. In this special episode of Over the Counter, Brian Nightingale from AmerisourceBergen returns to speak with Dr. Lakeisha Butler, immediate past president of the National Pharmaceutical Association, and Dr. Ryan Marable, current president of the association. The topic is Closing the Healthcare Gap, where experts will tackle the social determinants of health, improving access to care, and the pharmacist's role in addressing these disparities in healthcare to improve care for diverse populations.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to our ThoughtSpot 2020 podcast in partnership with Drug Topics. I'm Brian Nightingale, president of Good Neighbor Pharmacy, and today I am joined by Dr. Ryan Marable, president of the National Pharmaceutical Association, and Dr. Lakeisha Butler, immediate past president of the National Pharmaceutical Association. Thank you both for joining here today. Really appreciate your time and very much looking forward to the conversation.
Thank you, Brian, for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. You know, I'm really excited to have the opportunity to learn from both of you, really, and to discuss the important role that pharmacists and organizations like NPHA and others can play in increasing awareness and addressing the historical and cultural barriers of under-resourced communities, and certainly to promote racial and health equity, and hopefully advance the standards of pharmaceutical care amongst all practitioners for the communities that we serve. So again, really excited for this important conversation today, and appreciate you joining. But really, before we dive into to the key topics at hand, perhaps both of you can share a little bit about your backgrounds, your current position, and certainly the important mission of NPHA. So Dr. Butler, let's start with you.
Sure. So I wanted to start off and say I really appreciated the use of the word under-resourced, and we'll tap into that a little bit later because we don't use that very often. But it's the idea of being under-resourced. And so NPHA was founded in 1947 by Chauncey Cooper. He, during this time, NPHA was, unfortunately, members such as African Americans were not accepted into majority organizations. And so this was a time where this type of organization was needed. The mission, we're committed to serving underserved and under-resourced areas. We represent the views of minority pharmacists on critical issues affecting healthcare and pharmacy. We promote racial and health equity, as you mentioned, as well as advancing pharmaceutical care amongst all. You know, I am a lifetime member of NPHA and begin my journey of involvement as a pharmacy student. So I was a member of the Student National Pharmaceutical Association at Mercer University. And that was where I found my passion. As a pharmacy student, you know, I decided to get involved in an organization that's mission was serving the underserved because I knew that's what I had a liking for. And honestly, during that time, I was able to really find myself through the service and serving others. And I realized that I wanted to go into ambulatory care, academia, but wanted to be in communities that really were under-resourced and that needed additional education. And so after graduating from Mercer, I completed a pharmacy PGY1 residency in ambulatory care specialty at University of Illinois at Chicago. And within this time of my residency, once again, getting greater exposure to academia and knew right off the bat after that, I wanted to pursue a career in teaching. And so I went on board at Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville, as a clinical assistant professor. And I moved through the ranks of becoming a full professor at SAUE. In addition, my title as well is Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. And so during my teaching, I have once again found that the area that I'm most passionate about is equity, in addition to diversity and inclusion. And so all parts of my job, whether it's teaching, service, scholarship. It is blended among or around that topic of diversity, equity, and inclusion. So that's kind of my pathway. You know, as I have gone through the ranks in my career, I have found ways to serve the community, but also serving in greater capacities, and hence the previous service as president of the National Pharmaceutical Association. I do believe that serving is where you can make great impact. That serving, it doesn't have to be in a leadership role, but oftentimes, we can have a greater level of impact as leaders. And that was my desire, to have a greater impact through leadership.
That's great. Thanks for sharing that wonderful background, and I look forward to hearing more. So Dr. Marable, how about you?
Absolutely. So just to, pick up, right where Dr. Butler left off, as far as providing some context for the National Pharmaceutical Association. So we're affectionately known as NAPHA. So from here out, I'll refer to us as NAPHA. So NAPHA is one of the oldest predominantly Black professional pharmacy organization, established for pharmacists and other pharmacy professionals here in America. And our members, I feel like what makes us unique, yes, we are predominantly Black organization. However, our members are not only serving within these communities, but we are active participants. So we live, we invest, we work, we play, and we represent people nationwide amongst the people. So I thought that was a very unique aspect of our group, is that not only do we work professionally within these areas, but we're a part of them and we're active. So it's something that's very important. But just a little bit about myself. So I am a relatively recent graduate from the James Winkle College of Pharmacy at the University of Cincinnati in 2013. But just to kind of take it back a few steps, so my first experience, which led to my passion in life, was within a small independent pharmacy. So it was a father and son team. The son was the manager and developer of the location, and the father, who was also a pharmacist, they worked side by side. And I just thought that was just such a concept, because it was in an under-resourced and underserved area within Dayton, Ohio, where I'm from. And just seeing the level of rapport that those pharmacists had with the patients, and the level of respect that they each received based in the fact that they were providing a service and care for the people within their area, I just thought that was something that I could perform, or something that I could do, because it was a model of behavior or action that I felt like I could achieve. And it somewhat lit a flame in me to move forward with. So that drove me toward the University of Cincinnati. And because of that experience within a community pharmacy setting, I was full speed ahead to become a community pharmacist. So for my first 7 years of my career, I was in the community pharmacy space. So I staff pharmacist. I also spent 2 years as a direct patient care pharmacist, working with the diabetes and hypertension coaching program within Kroger Pharmacy, which is here in Cincinnati. Recently transitioned over to management. So served as a manager for 2 years, which was a very enriching experience. It was actually pretty much the end goal for me. However, I would say after that 2 year experience, I felt a little boxed in. So I wanted to do something that would expand my horizon as far as my impact within people. So that transitioned over to my current role within the industry space. So I'm currently a drug information associate with Eversana within their medical communications department. So it's been very enriching. How did I get involved as far as being an advocate for the profession? I would say my journey is very similar to many pharmacists from around the country. Just from the day-to-day task and providing service during your workday, there can be times where you can feel burnout. So in order to prevent that, I felt that it was very important to remain engaged within the profession and networking with other individuals who have goals similar to mine, as far as addressing, barriers to care and access amongst the most vulnerable people within our various populations. And that is what drove me to NAFLA. It initially started off with my experience with the student affiliate during my time at the University of Cincinnati. And then that transitioned over on the professional side with NAFLA. So it's been a very awesome 7 years as a pharmacist, and just looking forward to continuing that precedence during my time with UPHA as president.
That's great. And now you've got the gavel. So we're looking forward to that. So, I mean, you both mentioned, first of all, great to get to know more about you. Thank you and for sharing. And you know, you both talked a lot about communities and communities that you serve. And of course, that's what, you know, the profession is all about. So let's dive into, you know, certainly the patients in the communities that we serve. And in particular, you know, the role of social determinants of health in access to care. You know, there's a lot of diverse communities. Our Good Neighbor Pharmacy Network, we have, you know, over 5,000 of those independent community pharmacies, really across a broad geography, you know, in the U.S., rural settings, urban settings, certainly suburban settings as well. And of course, they serve, you know, patients across a very broad socioeconomic and demographic spectrum. And so, you know, one of the things that we sometimes struggle with when we're developing programs to support these pharmacies is really that role that the various social determinants of health play in how care is provided, and also importantly, how care is received, you know, across various geographies and communities, and ultimately how that impacts patient outcomes within these diverse communities. So, Dr. Maribel, you know, how does MPHA view kind of the role of social determinants of health, and why do you think they're so important for pharmacists to have a better understanding of?
Thank you, Brian, for laying that question out like that. I feel like it's definitely something that you have to take a step back and view from a wider angle. The term social determinants of health, just to provide some additional context, are conditions in the places where people live, learn, work, and play that affect a wide range of health risks and outcomes. So just in general, we often associate, as you know, pharmacy professionals and healthcare professionals in general, we often view, you know, an individual's behavior as the major driver behind, you know, how their health outcomes will be determined. However, that's typically only about 10% of the, you know, of how that person or that individual, their health will actually play out. So you have to think about, you know, what is that other 90%? What is actually creating a much more significant impact on their health? And that's where those social determinants come into play. It's those things that, you know, individuals, those things that groups of people and various populations that they can't control. So those things can present themselves in a number of different ways. So that could be educational access and quality of that education. That could be an individual's particular neighborhood or their actual environment. So you have to think, you know, if you're an individual living in an area, if you have poor infrastructure, if you don't have access to transportation, it could be difficult for you to access your actual primary care physician, or you have difficulty getting to a pharmacy, or there may not be a pharmacy within, you know, 15 or 20 minutes. You could have the strongest intentions in taking care of yourself and uplifting your, you know, addressing the health needs that you may have. But if for any particular reason you don't have that access based on your community's infrastructure, you're going to be behind, and that can greatly impact your overall health. Also, this is one area that I never really thought about until diving a little bit more deep into the topic, was the social and community context. So how does an individual's ability to become included within their overall community, how can that impact their feeling and their perception of how their health should be played out? You often see this in the forms of civic participation, levels of discrimination, mass incarceration. So this is often evident in the topics of criminal justice reform, You also have areas of workplace conditions. So if you have poor workplace conditions, that can even spill over into one's treatment or their overall care. And then, of course, you have economic stability. So if you have individuals who have employment issues or food insecurity or housing stability, these are all just different areas that as individuals, we just don't have as much control over. And that can ultimately play into your health. And, you know, just outside of that, you know, once an individual is placed, you know, in those types of situations where these areas are gone unchecked, that could put an individual in a position to where they're basically going from being in a position to thrive, and then they're forced into survival mode. And survival mode, often what is seen when an individual or a group of individuals, they're just basically trying to make the best out of a situation. So, you know, if it comes into play of identifying the most nutritional based foods, if they can't afford that, or if they can't, you know, identify the quickest way to get it, they're going to do whatever they have to do just to survive. And, you know, that just puts an individual in a position where their health could be put in jeopardy.
Yeah, so it sounds like what you're saying is when we as pharmacists are caring for a patient, in many instances, what's in that patient profile or on that chart represents only about 10 to 15% of what actually you need to know to be able to understand their healthcare environment and some of the barriers to appropriate care. And that's a pretty startling number when you think about the lack of information that a caregiver and a pharmacist has in front of them. So Dr. Butler, maybe you can transition that into education, and are pharmacy students starting to learn more about the importance of those factors? And is there a role for the pharmacist in capturing that information and making care plans accordingly?
Absolutely, Brian. So Dr. Marable did a great job of setting up the foundation of the importance with social determinants of health and factors that contribute to it. Ironically, this is the honest truth, I am teaching this tomorrow to my students, where we are discussing social determinants of health and specifically how that plays with systemic racism. And so I know we'll talk a little bit more about that later, but I think it's important to reiterate what Dr. Marable said about this iceberg, that we only see the surface when we are interacting with patients, or when we're looking in their charts and coming up with healthcare plans for them. And so, yes, the importance of relationship with the patient becomes critical in order to understand and have a better sense of how these factors are contributing to their health outcomes. I oftentimes think of some of my real patients that I take care of. And many of them, because of where they live, I serve predominantly African-American patients that live in under-resourced areas. So when it comes to finding places that, for instance, grocery stores, those are limited in the areas that they live. However, fast food restaurants are, in high demand, and their high numbers that exist in those areas. This idea of, problem patients that aren't showing up for their appointments, or they're not getting their prescriptions filled. We may view them as problem patients, but digging deeper to understand why. Anytime I see a patient who's not taking their medications how they should be taking it, I know that there's a much deeper story on why they're not taking it. As Dr. Marable mentioned, survival mode makes you create priorities. So sometimes healthcare is not necessarily a priority when you have to pay bills and you're concerned about medical bills that you may incur from going to the hospital. And so not going to the hospital just seems like the easiest thing to do. So therefore, health may not be that healthcare may not be the priority. Also transportation, Dr. Mirbel talked about that, but I see that very often. If you're depending on public transportation and if you miss your stop, that could actually delay you or get you completely off track with getting to work on time. And that can, you know, snowball into lower performance at work and potentially affecting employment rates. Also, we talk about housing. And so housing, depending on where you are, there may not be sidewalks. And, you know, we know that with healthcare, physical activity is important to decrease our risk for disease states such as cardiovascular disease, diabetes. And if there aren't sidewalks to walk on, or if you don't feel safe to go out and walk, then that can contribute as well to a decreased level of physical activity. And so finding optional ways or other ways, alternatives to increase physical activity, you know, I oftentimes will say, well, go up and down the stairs in your home, going down into your basement and maybe doing some exercise there, parking further away when you're at certain places. So that takes time and that takes a genuine interest in your patients, a genuine relationship building with the patient in order to uncover this huge iceberg that's contributing to what we're seeing on the surface.
Those are great points. And I guess, yeah, I think you're talking about, you know, structural and societal barriers and things that that can create issues that show up at the point of care that the care provider has no idea about. And then I can imagine that that lack of awareness of what happened from the time, you know, that person left their home to try to get to their appointment or the pharmacy, and that, you know, again, due to just either outright racism or unconscious bias, the automatic thought might be, well, they just must not care. So why should I care, right?
Yes.
So kind of tie into the pharmacy, you know, role in this a little bit. I've been in other conversations where, you know, there's a whole conversation around trust and mistrust. How can care providers or pharmacists that are white and, you know, that may not understand or be aware of a lot of the challenges and issues that we're talking about, what should we do to better build that trust so that we can create that better relationship that you're talking about?
Absolutely. I think the first step is that interpersonal work, truly finding ways to educate ourselves on what might be contributing factors to these decreased health outcomes. So it does take a deep dive into historical context. And we know that we're here today because of history. And there have been hundreds of years of marginalization, of underrepresented, marginalized or minoritized communities. And because of that, we have biases. We all have biases because of what we've been taught, what we've been told, what we see in the media. And specifically, when we think about our white colleagues, because of the historical context in our country, there is an innate feeling of negative bias against individuals that are of color. And so because of that, oftentimes it biases are considered to be unconscious most often, especially in the healthcare field. But we have to take a deeper dive and really understand and self-reflect on what is our socialization? How were we socialized as individuals when we grew up in our home? What were some messages that we received about the patients, minority patients that we take care of? Those socializations really stick with us until we decide to disrupt the cycle. We continue to stay in that socialized cycle based on what messages we received internally and inside our home and externally until we decide to educate ourselves. And that's why I say that interpersonal work is so important. I think the other piece is listening and seeking to understand your patient. So those open-ended questions, and I like to use the term cultural humility instead of cultural competence, because cultural humility says that I'm coming as a pharmacist to the table certainly with knowledge in medications, disease state management, but that patient is also coming to the table with knowledge about themselves. And so I'm here to also learn from them about what factors or just that, once again, that iceberg that we need to uncover to understand the patient at a deeper level. Another approach would be avoiding further marginalization when communicating. And that is verbally and non-verbally. So non-verbally, you know, we don't want to stand up over a patient. If we have an opportunity to be, you know, eye level with them, sometimes, you know, I recommend taking off the white coat if possible, because white coat, we've heard of the white coat syndrome with high blood pressure, but that resonates across the board with many patients as a power dynamic and this level of feeling like they're being judged. The other piece is the terminology that we use. So if we're stating that someone has they're at greater risk for diabetes because of their race, that's not necessarily true. That's a level of marginalization. Because of the color of your skin, you're saying that you have this condition, that's something that they could not control. And so that's a further marginalization when we're communicating to them. And so we want to avoid that because honestly, race is a social construct that was made up. And we know that there are not many differences between individuals based on race. And so really those differences or those disparities are due to those social determinants of health that we've talked about that stem from the systemic and structural racism that we've outlined. Educating and empowering patients. So really taking the time, once again, I mentioned listening and seeking to understand, but educating them and empowering them on their disease state. So, you know, I have many patients that really don't understand why they're on a medication. And so sitting down and helping them to understand that really goes a long way. That helps to build trust because first off, you're taking the time to educate and you see them to be important enough to provide them with additional information and helping them to once again be their own advocate for their health care. So I think those are a few ways or approaches to help build trust among minoritized populations. Certainly what we say and how we act, but also that interpersonal work is key.
And that's such a great way to put it. And I think a great context. I mean, the takeaway for me, just from what you just said is again, it's not the color of your skin that's raising your risk of a disease or an outcome. It's what's behind your life, right? And your social determinants of health. And that's a great way to put it. Dr. Marable, I think let's kind of continue that though, but not necessarily from the patient or the community perspective, but from the professional perspective. And you know, what challenges or barriers do professionals, you know, minority professionals face in their day-to-day practice and caring for patients, whether it's a white patient or a white, you know, coworker or provider that you're working with, does that play into this as well?
Oh, absolutely. So just as a minority professional working, I would have to draw back to my experience with during my time as a direct patient care pharmacist. So during that period of time, I was working more closely with the health primary care physicians, and you know, you would reach out to them and ask certain questions and, you know, elicit feedback from them. And there could be sometimes, like, if they, you know, have an idea that you may be Black or that you may be of a different ethnicity, that you could get some pushback. But just some things that I just try to recommend for other, you know, minority professionals is just go into it as far as just establishing like who you are and like what you're representing. Like, you're here as a pharmacist and the end goal is to represent for the patient. I feel like just in general, just to kind of go back toward, you know, what Dr. Butler was mentioning as far as, you know, the levels of bias. I feel like we all have like similar goals that we're working toward as healthcare professionals, but those biases are just, they're just natural things that occur within us. The only difference is that we all have a different perspective or a different lens that we're viewing those, viewing the goals through. And that lens is produced through our life's experiences. So the things that we go through as individuals, the experiences that we may have seen friends and family go through growing up, just cultural stories that you may have heard of growing up, that really shapes us and it doesn't really go away. And if, you know, once you become, you know, a working professional and you're a pharmacist and you're practicing within your respective field, if you don't address that and if you don't acknowledge it, then it can get out of your control and it could be manifested in your communication with other health professionals. So if I had to make, you know, just a point toward other healthcare professionals and pharmacists specifically, I would just encourage, you know, each person to identify like what their specific biases may be, do some level of self-inventory, and just try to make those changes. And being committed to making those changes, I think is very important, because as you're making these types of changes, as you're seeing that you have these level of biases, and you see other individuals around you who may have similar biases, if you start to, you know, call individuals out, or if you voice your opinions, you will probably receive some pushbacks. If you're committed to change, to making that change and changing your environment and individuals around you, it's going to be of even greater importance that you have a very strong foundation and knowledge and understanding of exactly what those biases are and how you can address those changes for other individuals as well. Additionally, it's going to be important not to wait for someone else to educate you. So those are somewhat like within like your professional workplace. You may have a mandatory in-service or training event. Like you cannot wait for those things to happen. You're going to have to do some legwork and go out there and really try to find those resources that can create that knowledge base for yourself. In PHA, we have anti-racism resources on our website. The Office of Minority Health has a tremendous amount of resources that are at your disposal. CDC.gov/social determinants of health, there's resources there. And even if you wanted to dive a little bit deeper and identify, you know, wealth inequalities and information, the federalreserve.gov, they have so many resources that will allow you to paint a much wider picture. So if you are challenged and you are, you know, reaching out to members within the professional community and you're addressing, you know, those levels of biases in order to create that true change that you want, you'll have that knowledge base and you'll have the resources that not only prepare other individuals, but it helps to keep you strong in your quest to commit to that change and changing others.
And I just wanted to piggyback on a couple of things Dr. Mirabal mentioned, which were great. It's important to start the work, right? So we have to understand that we all, as Dr. Mirabal mentioned, because of our life experiences, we all have a lens that we're looking through. And so if we take the stance of being colorblind, that's not going to solve the problem. If we take the stance that I'm just going to treat everyone the same, that is not going to solve the problem as well, because everyone is not the same. We've talked about how where we live, work, play, it varies. Those social determinants of health, again, creeping back up, and that creates differences, disparities. And because of that, we cannot treat everyone the same, because we won't see movement. So therefore, the work has to start, and that has to be a desire for all pharmacists. You know, we can go back to the oath of the pharmacist and how we are committed to serving all humanity, and that includes everyone. And so we have to start the work. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that accountability partner. And so once you do start the work and you're educating yourself, it's very easy to get complacent and say, okay, I've read a couple of books. I think I'm good now. But there are going to be times that you may say certain things. So for instance, you might state a microaggression, or you might minimize the work of a minority colleague and not even know it, because once again, those biases are creeping up. So having an accountability partner who you're not afraid of listening to, but also individuals that share with you that, you know, something you said just didn't sit well with them, or that was offensive. Being open to receive that feedback and reflecting and actually changing as well. The other piece that I wanted to add is this idea of, you know, we talk about the biases of our predominantly white colleagues or pharmacists. It's also important to understand racial trauma from a minority pharmacist perspective as well. I know that I've talked to many of our members, you know, especially our Black male pharmacist, and just riding in their car, driving to work, creates a level of fear because of what we have experienced, what we've seen happen in our community. And we're bringing that to work, and that can translate into a variety of ways where we're certainly more closed, or it affects our work. And so we have to recognize that not only do we have, as Black pharmacists, have the life experiences that have been passed down from generation to generation, but right now we're dealing with racial trauma. I know for myself, during the summer, there were many instances that I just broke down and cried because of the effect of that, of seeing so many of people that look like me being killed. And that's important for, I want our white colleagues to understand the impact of that. So I really think it's important, not only building relationships with our patients, but also one another, the importance of understanding and engaging with our with Black pharmacists and other minoritized pharmacists as well.
I was just going to provide a quick example, and it doesn't even have to be over the top. As far as checking in on someone, it could be as simple as, you know, if there's a traumatic event that occurs, because they're going to occur clearly, just checking in on a colleague, just ask them, hey, how you doing? Simple things like that literally could, sometimes the answer might not be what you expect. It could be an emotional outpour, but the fact that, you know, as an individual who might not necessarily feel affected by that traumatic event, the fact that you're asking, like, hey, are you, everything good? Like, you need anything? Like, or, you know, would you like to, I don't know, have lunch? Just something simple as that literally could, like, change the tide and could create a whole new level within your, you know, professional work relationship, depending on what that is. Like, it could be as simple as that. You know, I feel like in times, especially around these past, you know, 10 to 12 months, it has really been difficult. And oftentimes we just look to think of, like, what can we do? Like, what significant action, you know, can we do as leaders that can make a difference in the lives of not only our patients, but with other professionals? And sometimes it doesn't have to be such a significant event. It could be something as simple as just checking in on a colleague.
That's a great point. And you know, sometimes the fear of not knowing what to say, or the concern about I feel helpless, so I don't do anything, right? You make a great point, Dr. Butler. It's starting the work. And sometimes that starting of the work is a discussion, it's a conversation, and sometimes that starting of work is a simple outreach, like you mentioned, Dr. Marable. So that's a great way to kind of close out this part of the discussion. And again, these are incredibly important discussions to have. We must continue to continue the dialogue. It can't just be when something bad happens, we get together and talk. It needs to be, in my opinion, a continued dialogue that turns into action that then leads to positive change for patients that quite frankly deserve the best that our healthcare system has to offer, and they deserve the best that our profession has to offer. So love the conversation, really appreciate your openness, really appreciate your honesty. I've learned a lot and will continue to learn a lot, and look forward to continued conversations with you. And again, continue ideas and suggestions for our pharmacist colleagues to impact positive change. So I really appreciate that. And before we just wrap it up, I do want to ask you all to reflect a little bit on your tenure and leadership within NPHA. And so you pass the gavel on, Dr. Butler, to Dr. Marable. And as you pass that gavel and reflected on your tenure, what are your insights? What are you most proud of with what you've accomplished? And certainly your involvement with the association will continue. But just reflect on this past year and what you're most proud of.
Yes, thank you, Brian. My time as president of the National Pharmaceutical Association was certainly very insightful. It was a time of growth, and I appreciated every positive and negative opportunity that may have transpired. So everything that I learned certainly has made me a better leader. I'm certainly very proud of most recently, where we were able to, as an organization, lead the efforts in bringing other pharmacy organizations together in creating movement, or started off with a statement around racial injustice. And, we've seen that snowball in certainly a positive way with the different national pharmacy organizations in creating actionable items within their respective, organizations. So that has been something that we've certainly been most proud of. I think, when I started off as president, I had a vision, and that vision was action and excellence. And so there has definitely been a number of actions that have taken place, including advocacy, including just some branding for our organization, and really moving us to being the premier organization for addressing these types of topics. And so very proud of that, and certainly looking forward to continuing under the leadership of Dr. Marable.
That's great. And it sounds like, Dr. Marable, you've got some pretty big shoes to fill. What are you looking forward to, and what are you most excited about for this coming year?
Absolutely. First and foremost, thank you, Brian, for organizing this discussion. This has been great. A lot of great feedback and points of information. Even here, sitting here and being a part of the discussion, I've learned a tremendous amount as well. So thank you. But coming in after Dr. Butler during her tenure, it has been a great learning experience, but at this point it is time to lead. So I'm just thankful to be a part of the National Pharmaceutical Association. They're, such great leaders, from around the country in all facets of the field, from community pharmacy, which is my first passion, to industry, which is my current field and endeavor, to government affairs, to, managed care organizations. Our members encompass a wide variety of roles within pharmacy, and I'm just so excited to be a part of that and assist them and guide them to carry out the vision and mission of the organization. But in short, I just wanted to, my main push is to make things feel a little smaller. So you may have heard a statement that the world of pharmacy is small, but I want to make it even smaller. And the way that we do that is to bring people together. So my theme is United as One. So I want to bring pharmacists from all organizations to start to be able to communicate and collaborate with each other to bring about the best change for those most vulnerable individuals within our communities. I want to bring together medical professionals, political leaders, and all parties involved that can create a positive impact in the lives of our patients. Some of the issues that we currently face as pharmacists, they're bigger than pharmacy. And I know that might sound difficult because nothing can be bigger than pharmacy. But at the end of the day, we've just discussed that and we've hammered home on some of those topics related to social determinants of health. Many of those areas are larger than what we can handle. And I know it's tough to say that, that pharmacists can't handle something, but that's okay. In this situation, we have to depend on others to work with us collaboratively so we can bring about change, bring about equity amongst our health, and bring about positive change within our community. So I'm just very excited to serve as president of the National Pharmaceutical Association. And I hope to work with Good Neighbor Pharmacy, AmerisourceBergen, and any other organization that hopes to create change within our communities across this great country. So thank you.
That's it for this episode of Over the Counter. Thanks for listening, and make sure to subscribe and share with your pharmacy friends. For more over-the-counter episodes, check out drugtopics.com in our podcast section.